Now it's time for our weekly chat with Labor MP Andrew Little.
This week I spoke to Justice Minister Andrew Little on rent freezes, the database of a Chinese company with links to the Chinese military that included the personal information of more than 700 prominent New Zealanders, and his recent announcement that Labor would pay government contractors a living wage if elected. But first, I asked the Minister on recent developments at the Pike River mine. I can't want to kick things off this week by talking about Pike River. Now, sure. There's been updates yesterday.
Yeah, they've reached one of the most important points, which is the start of what's called the pit bottom and stone. So right at there's the 2.3-kilometre tunnel, or drift as it's called, and about 1,900 metres down, there's the start of this little group of smaller tunnels off to the side, which was called the pit bottom and stone. And in that area, there's a lot of equipment there that drove a lot of the machinery that was further in the mine workings. And if there was anybody who was able to survive the first blast, one place they could have got to would have been in pit bottom and stone. So there is a chance, even if a remote one, that there might be some human remains there. But even if there aren't, there are some other very important things there in terms of the forensic examination that now we've got there, we can get that work underway. So it was good to get the report that they've reached that particular point. There's about 600 metres worth of smaller tunnelling to sort of get through or to examine forensically. So that'll take some time, but that work is now underway.
So what will happen after those 600 metres of smaller tunnels are explored?
Well, we'll have a lot more information, and the police will have a lot more information. I mean, bearing in mind that there is still a criminal investigation open, and this is being treated as a crime scene. And so experts are helping and advising on how to examine the equipment and what have you, and the police may well send down their own experts to have a look at it. So the police are taking advice from overseas experts on what to look for and what they should be getting out of this. So it's going to be a very complex stage of the whole project at this point. So it'll be this part of the project will go for some weeks as they examine that area.
Moving on to another issue. Now, the government 6 months ago issued a freeze on increasing rents, but that's going to be expire on the 26th of September. Is the government having any plans to extend this freeze?
We don't have any plans to extend it, and that was very important during the lockdown, particularly the level 4 lockdown. People were had to be in homes. We stopped evictions and we stopped rents going up. We've already passed laws in relation to landlords and tenants, which means that although it's not rent control, it does mean that rent increases are confined to one a year. But also putting obligations on landlords to make sure that the place they're renting out meets various quality standards and what have you. But look, the big challenge in terms of keeping rents under control is more housing that people are living in, both affordable housing for people to own and more rental properties, state rental properties, so that people aren't sort of competing in the rental market, the private rental market. So that work is ongoing, but we don't have any further plans to extend the rent freeze.
But there are now concerns that landlords would bump up rents immediately after the freeze ends. So what do you think about this?
Yeah, and I think, look, you can't rule out that will happen, but if they put them up now, then it's another year before they can put them up again. I think the concern justifiably is that they could, any increases could be quite significant. In the end, landlords have to bear in mind that if they want to hold on to tenants, it's got to be affordable for them, so there could be some sort of constraint there. And that said, look, I've heard of landlords saying they're just pleased to have the tenants that they've got, and if they're good tenants, they don't want to do something that's going to potentially put the tenancy at risk. So look, there's a mix of factors there, but like I hand on heart, I can't say that there's no landlord that's not going to put the rent up. There will be some who will do that.
Moving on to another topic now, recently there has been a report on the existence of a database by a Chinese company called Zhenghua, and on the list there are at least 700 New Zealanders, and I quote, of political significance, and that included the Prime Minister's closest family members. So do you know if you are on the list as well?
No, as far as I know, I'm not on what's been released. I mean, as I understand it, the background is that the database was leaked. only about 10% of it has been disclosed. You know, whoever had the information leaked to them, they've only been able to get access to about 10% of the data on it, and it's included the 700 or 800 New Zealanders, as you've just said. So as far as I'm aware, I'm not within that 700 or 800. As I understand it, also this this is a it's a non-state outfit, although it's a Chinese outfit, and so it will have it'll have relations with state apparatus. But it is it's a collection of data, as I understand it, also most of it open source data, so it's stuff that's out in the public arena or been put up on social media and Facebook pages and things like that. And quite why this outfit was doing this, I don't know, but it's information that has been previously made publicly available. And we know that there are interests within China who seek to influence people in all sorts of countries and in all sorts of ways, whether this is some sort of collecting data for future influencing campaigns, who knows. But what it does mean is that, as we say to politicians and senior people right across New Zealand, is always be very careful about who approaches you, who's mixing with you, who's asking questions about you, because you don't really know what it's going to be used for.
Now, the SIS has said they will be conducting a review on this. So what does that mean in practical terms?
Oh, they're going through what the information is that is now available, that has been accessed and been put out there. So they're just going through it and just ascertaining whether there's anything unusual or untoward in the nature of the information that has been collected. Because if it's not information that's publicly available, then you'd want to know where they've got it from. But also just to see whether it does look like some people are being lined up for some either kind of low-level influencing or something more malicious. And, there's questions of national security that go with that.
Now, recently we did talk about cyber attacks in New Zealand institutions and now this Zhenhua list. How concerned should we be about our own cyber security now? Relations with China are deteriorating, not between New Zealand, but with other countries, and especially this list is affecting the close friends and families of some politicians.
Yeah, I think I'd separate the cyber attacks and other cyber activity than from this list. I think this list is, it's an unusual thing in Western terms to see this sort of thing. But there will be organisations around the world collecting data on individuals. It won't just be in China; it'll be in other countries too. So, sort of keeping in perspective. But I think the China is a country, it's a very wealthy country now. It has been working very hard over the last couple of decades to extend its reach and forge its relationships with many other countries. And the reality is China is a country that, that wants to interact with the rest of the world. It needs its food, it wants its technology, it wants its intellectual sort of input. That is what China does. And there are periods when it does it very aggressively, it's doing that now. Times when it's a little more diplomatic. The extent to which this list plays a role in that, it's hard to say. You'd have to assume that this company does have connections with the Chinese state apparatus, and it could be used in that sort of way. In terms of cyber attacks and what have you, that can come from any quarter, including from China, but there are a number of other countries where that have operations set up to try to disrupt or undermine cyber capability in other countries, and we've seen that. What we've also proven is that we've got a level of resilience to defend ourselves against it.
Recently, academics at Waikato University have accused the management of ignoring structural racism inside its ranks. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I've seen it in the reports, and it's very concerning if there are senior Māori academics with a very strong reputation here and abroad, are left feeling in that sort of way. That said, I don't know what the specifics are. I don't know what, to the extent that, universities are typically structured in certain ways. You've got vice chancellors and deputy and pro vice chancellors, and then you've got deans of faculties and what have you. I'm not quite sure what the structural racism that these academics are talking about relates to, and whether it's, them being able to determine their academic direction and the courses they do and the research that they do. I just haven't seen anything specific. I'm concerned that obviously there is something happening that means they have gone public with those allegations, and people don't do that lightly. And I think it's important that, you know, Waikato University or whoever, maybe even the Tertiary Education Commission, gets to understand what is behind it and starts to address it. As I understand it, Waikato University has, they've got Witta Gardner and Hekia Palata doing an inquiry into it, and look, well, I guess we'll find out where that leads, but I just don't know the specifics that underpin the allegation.
And going to the final topic, as the workplace relations spokesperson of the Labour Party, you announced a policy of giving the living wage to all government contracted workers. Can you give us a little bit more details on this?
Yeah, look, in this term, the last 3 years this government has, we made the promise of making sure that nobody in the core public sector, state sector, would be paid less than the living wage, and we followed through on that. Now we're sort of going one step out, which is that the organisations that contract to government departments, so cleaners, caterers, security guards and what have you. A few weeks ago, we committed to security guards working for MSD that they would be paid no less than the living wage. The particular promise we've made is if we're re-elected, we'll make sure that contractors to all other core government departments will be paid no less than the living wage. And this is just about a recognition that, look, there are a group of workers in a whole bunch of different areas and different ways, but particularly those ultimately working for the government, who are paid at very low rates and not paid the living wage. And this government and the Labor Party, if we are re-elected, wants to give a signal that we need to lift wages, particularly at the bottom end, and this is one way of doing that.
Why only the security guards at the Ministry of Social Development, though?
Well, that was because their collective employment agreement came up for renewal. The government was negotiating with the security firm that provides those security guards, and we said, well, here's an opportunity to start doing this right now, because those agreements tend to last for 2 or 3 years, and we wanted something, you know, we didn't want to wait another 3 years, so we started with them. But these contracts are coming up for renewal all the time. We did it for MSD, and we've signalled that as a matter of, you know, election commitments and election promise, that we will do this for those contracting to other government departments if we're re-elected.
That was Labor MP Andrew Little. The Wire.